So good afternoon and welcome to this session. Since I am orienting this towards the clinical practice, just to put my mind to rest, I'm clearing my way for showing the DVD, which is a method of showing how to do a spiritual assessment. Okay, so spiritual assessment, it's not simply by having a piece of paper, you know, and just ask questions. It's like, it's not like the medical assessment, but this is a way, a method of, while we take care of patients, we can talk to patients, especially if it is patient-centered and we have patient allocation system, so that we can have an idea of how to tackle the spiritual assessment. Of course, there are various factors with regards to the influences on the spiritual assessment, one of which is myself, is my own spirituality, is my own personality. And to have an idea, this is an American, which is known as RESPECT, and it is an acronym for respect, religion, effects, and so on, so that you can have an idea, and then we talk about the theoretical aspect. So can we start off?
The film, yes?
Yes, the film, please. Mm-hmm.
Professionals, we are trained to identify and provide for patients' physical needs. And on some level, we understand that our patients' physical health and healing is deeply affected by their state of mind. Knowing how to provide for a patient's spiritual needs, however, isn't usually part of our training. In a recent study of spirituality and healing in medicine, 94% of the healthcare professionals surveyed said they believe personal prayer, meditation, and other spiritual or religious practices can speed or help the medical treatment of people who are ill. It is not a stretch, then, to assume that understanding a patient's spiritual needs can assist us in helping our patients with their overall care. The Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organization Standards speaks specifically about the importance of assessing a patient's spiritual needs, whether it be a hospital setting, long-term care facility, or a home health program, the patient's state of spiritual well-being is a direct link to their degree of physical well-being. The process of assessing a patient's spiritual needs will vary according to each patient's situation. In some instances, it may be as simple as one or two questions to determine how a patient is coping with their present situation. In other cases, keen observation of the individual may alert one to the need for a more in-depth spiritual assessment to determine the level of emotional distress and whether the healing process is being affected.
Caregivers need to look both for needs and resources. The goal is to minimize the disturbances in a patient's spiritual life so that the patient's spiritual resources can be used to the maximum.
We have an analogy of this skinny little guy that's you would think would be frail and wind would blow him away, but he's as hard as a hickory nut. I mean, you could operate on him every day for a week, and this guy's going to be a survivor because he's just tough and he's a fighter. You've got the other scenario where they got the wet washcloth on the rag and woe is me and their lamp. And I think that these are some of the things that you pick up clinically to see, is there any fire in there? Is there any fight in there? Is there a light burning? Or is the light gone out?
It is believed that by understanding a person's religious experience, we understand their spiritual experience. However, spiritual needs are not necessarily religious needs. Appreciating the differences between spirituality and religion is one of the most important distinctions you must make in addressing the spiritual needs of your patients. While spirituality often includes religious experience, it is important to understand that spirituality has a much broader, more individual scope. Spirituality has to do with how an individual forms the core beliefs and life values that define how they find comfort, peace, and hope.
What are those things that bring me joy, bring me hope, bring me pleasure? What are the things that are truly important in my life? It may be fishing. It may be hiking in the mountains. It may be being with your dog. It could be being with your children, being with your family. But it's those things that enrich your life and make you feel full, make you feel like a significant, recognized human being.
To effectively meet the spiritual needs of our patients, we must understand and respect religious diversity. We must be sensitive and open-minded regarding our patients' religious beliefs and support religious practices that are not harmful to the patient or disruptive to our facility. Maintaining an attitude of openness and respect is a good starting point in performing an effective spiritual assessment. First, however, it is critical to conduct a self-assessment in order to determine whether our own core beliefs and life values are compromising our professional judgment.
Self-assessment is extremely important when you're going to be assessing someone's spiritual needs. It's important that you understand your own values, beliefs, prejudices, biases, so that we can ensure that we're not making value judgments. It's important to realize that if someone does something different from the way you do it, doesn't mean that they're wrong. It simply means that it's different. And being able to accept those differences is the first step in being able to do an open, non-judgmental assessment.
Self-assessment is an important part of your daily routine. Ask yourself the following questions. Are you open-minded? Can you respect differences in religious and spiritual beliefs? Do you have prejudices or preconceptions that may affect your attention to your patient's spiritual needs? Can you empathize with your patients? Can you put yourself in their place and consider their feelings? Do you welcome new experiences?
I think that a lot of care providers are probably uncomfortable because they're not used to speaking this language, this vocabulary. They probably feel that it may be an invasion of privacy and really not in their domain. They may be uncertain themselves about their own belief systems or spirituality, or just be uncomfortable with articulating this, discussing this. It's much easier to focus on the knee, focus on the blood pressure, focus on the activities of the day, getting the medications charted, whatever the issue is.
As you take steps to understand your own beliefs and values and the sources of your own spirituality, you will gain confidence in assessing the spiritual needs of your patients.
Assessing someone's spirituality is really basically what we do when we're working with a patient. We want to meet their needs, and when we notice that the patient needs something, we want to take care of that need. You're walking the patient to the bathroom, you're changing their dressing, you're working with them. While you're doing those things, that's when you can ask the questions about what helps them cope, what's important to them.
The acronym RESPECT is a useful tool to help you remember which questions could be covered during a spiritual assessment of the patient. Ask questions such as, do you practice a specific religion that influences what you believe and value? What effect do your beliefs and values have on your attitude toward life? Do you have family members or friends who will support you at this time? Will being in the hospital interfere with any practices that are important to your spiritual well-being? Are there past experiences, good or bad, that may impact your response to treatment? Are you a member of any community or group that shares your beliefs and values? Your trust is essential in our efforts to care for you. All of these questions will help you gauge the emotional well-being of your patient and give you valuable clues that will help you with intervention should it be needed. One way to establish spiritual health is to place the patient on a spectrum that moves from spiritually thriving to spiritually despairing. Spiritually thriving describes a patient who is generally attentive, hopeful, self-confident, has a sense of humor, and is motivated. Such patients work closely with the medical team and comply willingly with treatment. When a patient moves into a holding pattern, they are starting to be affected by fear and can seem upset, disoriented, or impatient. It is at this point that participation in their own care can no longer be taken for granted. Spiritually distressed describes patients who are losing motivation, confidence, and hope. The pressures of their condition are beginning to overcome them, and it is here the caregiver should consider intervention. Spiritually despairing patients are immobilized due to depression and hopelessness, and are apathetic to attempts at treatment. By this point, the spiritual problem has grown into a separate and competing medical problem. A referral to a counselor and/or spiritual leader is needed to assist the patient back to a stable spiritual state.
It's very important for caregivers to recognize and respond appropriately to patients in extreme moments of spiritual distress, because the patient's will to live is at stake.
If we can catch something early enough, in the earliest phase, we can prevent the person from going to the next level. Typically, in most settings, we cannot have pastoral care, the chaplain, the social worker, the professional counselor there at all times with our patients. We can't make a referral every time we see someone crying or every time someone expresses a fear or a concern. If we can deal with those basic needs before they escalate into huge problems where the person may need medications for depression, or they may need the referral, we can take care of it at the most basic level, then they don't move on to the next level.
Preventing or relieving spiritual distress is the key to helping a patient with their spiritual health. One of the most effective ways to do this is to listen. Effective listening requires that you be sufficiently attentive to verbal and nonverbal communication so that an accurate assessment can be made.
I think there's a tendency for us as healthcare professionals to think about our list. I have to see this patient, I have to check on lab, I have to see another patient, I have to be home in time to feed my children, and all of this is going on at the same time. But I think it requires an amazing amount of discipline to be able to stop before you enter the room and remember what it is you're about to do. And while this conversation may only take a minute or two or 5 minutes of your time for that patient, it may be immeasurably important.
When your patient expresses spiritual concerns, be cautious not to deny, minimize, or discount any feelings that are communicated to you. Avoid statements such as, "You shouldn't feel that way," or "Don't say that." Instead, offer validation by repeating what your patient has said to you. This helps create a connection between the patient and caregiver. It's important to remember that although we may have had similar experiences, we can never know what another is feeling.
Now, I can't understand what it's like to be going through this. Can you help me to understand what you're feeling?
Using phrases like, "What is it like for you?" and "Help me to understand how it feels," you will always know what to say and communicate to the patient that you care for them as individuals. You may initiate conversation with the patient by asking questions that require more than a simple yes or no answer. This helps you gain insightful information without seeming intrusive.
What can I do to make this situation better for you?
We're good at thinking of me, broken body, I can fix it. What about a spiritual need that's not being met? And that could come out in fear, loneliness, sadness. It could come out in a comment that a patient may make, "What did I do to deserve this?" So you're constantly listening for cues. And one of the things that's helpful is that's who we are as healthcare professionals. That's what we do. We observe, we notice. And when you notice something, that's when you realize this is a spiritual need. What can I do? How can I help this person?
Along with effective listening, the appropriate use of touch can be an effective technique in relieving spiritual distress. Touching is a way of connecting spiritually with your patients and can be very useful when used appropriately. However, keep in mind that touch has different meanings between people and cultures.
If you began by with a gentle touch or perhaps just on the hand, the shoulder, something that could be considered not to be invasive, that you watch the response. How does the person respond to that? Do they lean toward you? Do they back off? And then simply respect that.
I think that one of the most basic forms of touch is just eye contact. I think we probably don't think of that as touch, but again, some connection is being made. And I think these are reassuring, validating interactions that let the patient know that the healthcare provider is there with them and cares.
Studies are showing that in appropriate circumstances, humor can actually promote healing by its ability to both provide a perspective for suffering and create a bond between the patient and his caregivers. Humor may allow patients relief from spiritual distress. Strive to be cheerful and positive. And if the moment presents itself, you can involve the patient by asking for a funny memory or sharing a recent event that made them laugh.
A good laugh is good for everybody. So I think that one of our goals is to try to encourage and uplift people, and one way to do that is with humor.
For many patients, spiritual needs can be met through interaction of family and friends. Recognize this resource and do all you can to facilitate interaction. Encourage family members to become involved, when appropriate, in the physical care of the patient. Familiarity can bring comfort and confidence to a patient in a strange environment. It's imperative that healthcare professionals who interact with patients on a daily basis realize that the mind and body are not separate entities to be treated apart from one another, but rather parts of a whole. Both must be addressed equally in order to truly meet our patient's needs. Practicing patient care techniques such as listening to our patients, validating their feelings, asking open-ended questions that help gain insightful information, appropriately using touch and humor to comfort the patient, and encouraging interaction between the patient and friends and family members all create an environment of hope.
I think everybody can be sensitive and respectful of the patient's beliefs and can nurture a sense of hope and humor and goodwill that in incremental doses, I think given time and time again, eventually will have a cumulative effect and again push us further along our ultimate goal of relieving that patient's suffering or despair.
As one nurse tells us, life is a miracle, regardless of race, religion, or color. We must look at our patients as spiritual beings, not as the fractured hip in 202 or the diabetic down the hall. They are people we should know by name, and people whose human spirit we must respect.
So that was an example of spiritual assessment. Of course, you can discuss, there are limitations in it, and there are even mistakes. I could identify some mistakes in that picture, like, for example, communication, eye contact, and especially even eye contact has also cultural aspects. For example, we have students in Malta coming from Africa, and the minute you catch their eyes, they all of a sudden they you know, put aside their face, you know, to avoid eye contact. So yes, there are cultural influences and there are plenty of limitations, but that doesn't inhibit us from trying to do an assessment. And so my perspective here is on spiritual care in a hospital setting, but especially I'm addressing, first of all, the presence of the nurse, the presence of the psychologist, the presence of the members of the multidisciplinary team. As Professor Wilfried McSherry has said this morning, that there is the hard nurse and the soft nurse and the way we behave. So it is very important that it's not the role of the healthcare professional to do, but here we are looking at the being of the individual, the presence of the individual, which can influence a lot. So let's try to identify the issues that unfortunately we are, I could realize that secularization in certain countries, we are realizing the benefits of the spiritual dimension, and so we tend to go back to spirituality to identify the benefits. And so also of course there is the negative issues of spirituality. So if a person is having is a believer and he trusts in God, then there will be beneficial effects on the individual. But then all of a sudden, if he perceives God as a way of punishing him or her by the illness, or feeling that the individual is being abandoned by God, then we have negative effects. So we need to address by our care and by our understanding. And unfortunately, we keep on noticing that the medical model appears to be reigning. Medical model, whereby we can see the individual as a number of activities, a number of tests, and so we tend to go to put aside, you know, the holistic perspective, while unfortunately we tend to dehumanize the individual. So this is the problem, where the spiritual dimension tends to be neglected in the interdisciplinary team. So the plan here of this session is going to be definition of spiritual care, spiritual assessment of patients. We managed to do that successfully. And Watson's transpersonal caring healing framework. This is the theory where we can identify the beneficial effects of the presence of the individual. Research on spiritual care in hospital and requisites for spiritual care model, it is a model which came out of my research recently. And we go for recommendations. So spiritual care is not only the care which is related to the chaplain. So, but we need to understand that the chaplain is the expert if he's well equipped by certificates, professional courses where the individual can apply his pastoral care professionally. However, the spiritual care should also be the role of the nurses and the interdisciplinary team, including the family and the patient. So we need to bear in mind that the family can influence the patient, can support the patient. It was only recently that I have, in my study unit on spiritual care to healthcare professionals, this is an optional study unit where students come to this study unit, and I had students coming from the medical lab sciences. And so identifying the person in that blood sample, you know, the students told me that we just go by the result. The result is malignancy, the result is multiple sclerosis, the result is death, and we have so much work to do that we move on to the other blood sample without realizing that that person is a person, that that person has a family. So the assessment strategy of this study unit was, it was a passing 5 hours voluntary work by visiting a family with a disability, for example, a child with disability, so that these students could identify the personhood in that blood sample. And so it was a transformation in those students, saying that, I mean, we could see the impact of the family, how much the family wanted that the disabled child or the person with special needs, how much they managed to help her, that nowadays she's she managed to be even a learning support assistant. You know, a disabled person, she has become a learning support system. You know, the children with disability, they would have the helper, and she couldn't realize how that person has transformed herself and the support of the family, how much she managed to achieve in life. And this is the humanization of the family and the impact on the patient. Spiritual care is being rather than doing. So we've been saying what the individual should do. But do whatever you need to do to the patient, but in a way of putting your behavior, you know, in such a way. And that would be all spiritual care. I published a book on spiritual care, being in doing, because there is a lot of research on patients which conducted in Malta, and even in comparative studies, where we could realize, and patients were asking the nurses, be with us, don't just act, but be with us, even from your behavior. I mean, we can learn, we can be helped, we can be listened. So I believe so much in spiritual care, being rather than doing. So this is an example in the miracle in Cana. You know, Our Lady just whispered to Jesus in the wedding reception, they have no wine. You know, she was sensitive. Unfortunately, I mean, we tend to perhaps hide, integrate ourselves within the limitations of the hospital, overloaded work, and we don't have much time and so on to dedicate. But as we have seen even in the assessment demonstration, that while we are working with patients, we can do the spiritual assessment. We can help them. In fact, we can realize that the environment, and it is very interesting here, that the environment in which the human rights, according to the YCM, values, customs, and spiritual beliefs of the individual, family, and community should be respected. And one thing which I would like your opinion, even during the discussion, is that I have participated in a comparative research between Norway and Malta. And patients, nurses and caregivers, they mentioned that spirituality, we try to identify the definition of spirituality, and spirituality incorporated even communication with evil spirits, which is hard for me, you know, to accept. But this ICN code of ethics here, where, first of all, Satanism is a belief. Satanism, which I know that when, for example, in Malta, when it is full moon, at times there is disastrous demonstrations of this full moon, you know, where individuals destroy cemeteries, for example, you know, and there is so much negative aspects. that Satanism here, where individuals said that spirituality is also includes evil spirits, I really can't understand. I discussed this issue with Professor Wilfred McSherry, because I sent it to him. How are we going to discuss this? And it involves a lot of ethical issues. So let the environment do no harm. This is a very ancient statement, but I believe that it is still needed, much needed in our care. However, we need to bear in mind that spirituality, the spiritual care, the external circle is the spiritual person. It involves also the biological, psychological, and the social. However, that's the atheist, but we have the religious person, where we have the religion, which, as we have said, that religion can produce beneficial effects, but also it can also generate negative effects. So we need to help individuals in these ill effects and also the positive effects. Active role in spiritual care. So this the active role in spiritual care, here it involves the presence of the individual and also the assessment. While we talk with patients, we need to assess as we go along through our care. We do have, for example, in Malta, we tend to have a holistic type of assessment on paper. And one of the questions being asked is, your religion? You know that at times nurses feel scared to ask, what is your religion? And I don't even answer that question, let alone how much they would ask that question. And individuals, according to their beliefs, I mean, they would have the respective needs, even including at times nutrition, which could be affected. And also blood investigations and blood donation and blood receiving blood in care. So spiritual care aims to assess spiritual needs on an ongoing basis and address spiritual needs holistically. Being in spiritual care may yield the holistic doing. So the emphasis is on being while we do the care, while we deliver care. So in being, the transpersonal caring healing framework of Jean Watson sheds light on our performance, on our transpersonal behavior. So the theory, in brief, says that a conscious intention to care may enhance the healing effect of medical interventions and wholeness in care. So going on the ward, going to the community with the intention of helping individuals, that's the first stage of that. Yes, I intend to take care of the patient, and therefore it can help. My presence can be effective, can be a source of healing. Transpersonal relationship between the nurse and the patient. So the transpersonal relationship, I've been in nursing now since 1975, and I've learned so much in my life, and I've learned through my life experiences, but I learned a lot from patients. So while I was caring for patients, I received a lot. So that is very important to realize, and we trace our transformation also. This transpersonal relationship influenced the attitudes of both the nurse and the patient. So research on spiritual care, we have been saying a lot on illness, maybe a spiritual encounter, both for patients and nurses. Therapeutic relationship is activated by the active presence, physical, mind-to-mind, spirit-to-spirit. And for the believers, healing may be enhanced by religious beliefs. And personal spirituality of the caregiver may be enhanced while recognizing the transformation complex of giving and receiving. So yes, I do believe that I have learned a lot, that I have transformed myself a lot, even the core values of my life. I'm appreciating more time, for example. I'm not taking time for granted, but I'm trying to make the best out of my time. Whereas there were times where perhaps I didn't use time efficiently enough. So personal growth, it is spirituality, can be also a means of spiritual growth, life experiences, and personal spirituality might help to address patient spiritual needs while experiencing also spiritual growth through the delivery of spiritual care. Of course, it is debatable because our beliefs may be different from that of patients. However, yes, we need to accommodate in our care patient beliefs, and we need to identify also the positive aspects of their own their beliefs. I'm trying to have quotations from this. It was quite a large sample study where we could identify. So these pictures are inviting you to come to Malta in 2 years' time, you know. Yes, it's in Gozo. Yeah. It will be spring. This is in Gozo, so the
salt mines,
that's it. Yes, integrating the individual person within the role of the professional. I have followed, you know, sunrise, and it was right on the top of that little hill, whatever, and it is right that the spiritual care we need to address directly to patient, although it could be even indirectly. Community chaplain, one of them said, one of the patients I visited pointed out to intensive care given by a nurse. He stated that not only does he look after my physical welfare, but through his own spirituality, he conveys a message which gives me courage and strength. There you are, presence of that nurse. Then a hospital chaplain said, the inner faculties of individuals help nurses to think and behave according to their own spiritual values. Nurses should be in harmony with their conscience and their relationship with God, family and others, as this may reflect on the life of the person and may affect the way nurses communicate with patients and others. So it is well known and even well documented that unless individuals, I mean, we need to debrief ourselves from our own problems to try to be there for the patients.
You've got 15 minutes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me, because I need to present Josephine's paper.
Right.
Yes. Again, I feel that we need to go back again to the vocation of the professional. In Malta, we have our studies, our nursing studies and healthcare professional studies have been integrated part of the University of Malta. And so we are having nowadays sort of academics with perhaps a forecast of wanting to promote themselves and so on. So we need to really reply to the inner call, to the call, and that is vocation. The work of a nurse should be looked upon primarily as a vocation, a call with a very specific mission to fulfill. The patient expects nurses to be healing agents, or at least to help in easing his or her sufferings, both physical, psychological, and even spiritual ailments. Their care, gentleness, humane approach, and constant concern will help the patient recover fully and quickly. Building a trustful relationship between both sides will facilitate the healing process. There you were, the presence of the caregiver. Humane approach and being there, giving and receiving. I believe that our inner energies and our energies, spiritual energies, we can learn from each other. We can help in the healing process of the patient, and the patient can help us also in our healing if we pay attention. Of, for example, at times, I'm really surprised of how patients manage to accept their illness, how they manage to cope and be peaceful spiritually well during their illness. So I strongly suggest that nurses should make their presence felt more with their patients. Nurses need to be educated on spiritual care. They learn about psychology, sociology, and others, so they must include also spiritual care. And this is the model which came out of my research, which is acronym MARVIC. We need role models. We need role models. One might argue that spirituality is spirituality caught versus taught. Shall we teach? Is there a need to teach during the sessions? I have been always curious about this, but I'll soon present Josephine's work. And yes, teaching apparently it helps to help individuals, nurses, healthcare professionals to deliver spiritual care, to deliver holistic care. We need to arm ourselves with education, updating ourselves, because at times a question which I tend to ask even nurses who have been registered: have you been reading at all? Have you been, you know, continuing with your professional? I need a break now. I've had enough. You know, so we need to update ourselves. Otherwise, we fall in the trap of delivering medical care rather than holistic care. Reflection in action and reflection on action. So the vocation, as I told you, responding to the call, and we need to take initiative to learn more, initiative to do research, initiative to do our best, you know, because at times we fall into the routine basic care. I mean, at times when I visit patients on a Sunday, for example, Sunday in Malta, it is double paid. So we hardly ever have nurses and healthcare professionals taking vacation leave on Sunday or on a public holiday. But one would ask, is care on Sunday any different from those hectic days, other days during the week? I tell you, the extra time is being taken by extra time, extra tea times, extra nurse station time, and that we need to take initiative to communicate with patients in our time, and commitment, which I can foresee that commitment. I mean, it's a value, it's a foundation to our care, to spiritual care. So spiritual care is being which enables effective doing. So recommendations, education, we need more psychologists, further research. And research suggests that unless nurses and healthcare professionals are in tune with their own spirituality, they would not be in a position to deliver spiritual care effectively. Healthcare professionals may provide holistic care by delivering, yes, spiritual care, and also by providing care spiritually. And this is a challenge. Your clients don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And thanks for from Malta. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll go
yes,
to
the presentation of your friend also.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, good, good.
Okay.
F5, yeah.
You know better.
Yes.
16 sound?
No need of sound. That's it, yeah. So I'm presenting Josephine. Josephine Attarch, she's a doctoral student. Josephine is a midwife and a nurse also. And she is into the Delphi method approach to try to identify a set of competencies in spiritual care. And so she is using a modified Delphi study for nurses and midwives. And we are including also patients, what patients think, what healthcare professionals think about these spiritual care competencies. We believe that we are in the education sector, and unless we have a set of competencies where we can be guided on how nurses and healthcare, up to now, I mean, this is the framework of competencies for nurses and midwives at point of registration. So we are using the, I'm supervising this study with University of Glamorgan, and we are a set of, we're a team. And so we, the same rationale that we identify that there is a gap in nursing and midwifery and knowledge relating to the education and provision of spiritual care. So I have been teaching on spiritual care, but I haven't identified competencies by which students, I expect students at the end of their final year. So which competencies are needed by nurses and midwives to meet the client's spiritual needs? And how can they be validated and developed? So the process is pulling together all available evidence. So what happened is competencies is composed of knowledge, skills, and attitudes. So we have identified first the literature, what the literature is saying. And there's only very few research that identifies competencies on spiritual care. So first it was the literature, the process. And so we identified a draft, we developed a draft on spiritual care competencies. And these competencies then, they were altered because they were based on the literature, but then we organized focus groups. So focus groups of patients, focus groups from nurses and healthcare professionals, so that we can add to the list already identified from the literature. And of course, this list is seeking now validation and consensus. We need to reach a consensus at the end. And this is the role of the Delphi method. And of course, it is a modified Delphi method. So this is the process where we identified, where we validated also with the focus groups, and we continue to formulate and we hope also to, following consensus, we hope to send the list, which would be validated and where we reach consensus there, and we send it to regulatory bodies and experts like you, Jackie. Mm-hmm. Kathleen.
Yeah, I'm not an expert.
Uh-huh.
I wish.
We'll define what an expert is soon. Uh-huh. so we can identify this. And so the methodology that it was adopted was a mixed method approach, and it was the eclectic approach framework. We wanted to identify these competencies from the public and academics by the literature and also by the focus groups. And then we wanted to have the specific focus groups, and we need, hopefully, to go back. These competencies would hopefully be applicable because they would be generic competencies also. So the literature review, we have gone through these stages, and we identified those. But this is, it is very important here that these are the domains where it's interesting to find also, look, the body of knowledge here, which is composed of the interpersonal relationships and communications, self-awareness and use of self, ethical and legal issues, assessment of implementation of care, quality assurance, and it is very interesting that we have informatics. So we didn't find informatics so much in the literature, but it was suggested by the focus groups. For example, informatics, in Malta we have a new hospital, and we have the monitor, and that they could connect themselves with the internet. So, for example, there were suggestions of the patient might be helped by having a statement of encouragement on the screen, and also by using the monitor for the case history of the individual person. So informatics is pretty new, and we're querying the extent of perhaps consensus that we are reaching on informatics. And so competency development was knowledge, skills and attitudes, and here the interrelationships. Because after all, we need to take care of the ethical perspective, because ethics underpins all the domains. And these are the selection of the focus groups, and there was a thorough process of identifying the codes and also the categories and then the themes. So we had 38 competencies were generated, and so it is a whole thorough procedure of identifying the themes. So there are different categories, and then we continue to sieve them out. So as you could see, that following the focus groups from educators and patients, caregivers, we went through these categories also to integrate them together, to see the commonalities between the different focus groups. So then we have 54 competencies when we put them together. The Delphi method is based on validity and consensus. So we have identified the experts, and the experts we have identified also, we use the Carper's theory for experts also, and we could identify that even patients, although they are not so much knowledgeable, but they are experienced. So the Delphi experts would be nurses and midwives, nursing educators, chaplains and spiritual leaders, policymakers, persons considered as an authority in spiritual care, nursing and midwifery, clients. Uh-huh. and to have patience also. So that this is Karpar's four ways of knowing and Benner five levels of nursing experience from novice to expert. So it's all well supported by this is the definition of experts, you know. So empirical, the ones that they have conducted research, ethical issues with regards to moral knowledge, aesthetic, the art of nursing, personal knowing. So it's a whole. Up to now we have identified the experts, and the tool is being has been piloted and is being retested for psychometric testing to be done, and will soon start the rounds to the experts. And hopefully the last phase would be consultation, and that we look forward for consultation, especially when we, after the consensus, we might use this, if you don't mind. I mean, I hope to use the because I could see the attendance to this conference is maybe it could be a meaning that individuals are interested, and is even from research, from the posters and from the papers, we could see that how much research is going on the spiritual dimension in care. So, and hopefully we'll end up with recommendations and provide not only Malta with a set of guidelines, but also to Europe and global, because it is like you know, starting from the literature and then the focus, and then hopefully we go back globally. And there you are. This